They were everywhere. There were dozens of them, hundreds even. Bodies littering the beach as far as Lackey could see. He worked methodically and efficiently, emotionless. He had a job to do, nothing more. Hands dipping in and out of pockets, tugging and turning bodies one after the other. He no longer bothered to look at their faces. What was the point? The body was face down in the sand, its pockets wedged under him. "Let's go," Marco said, turning to Clotho even before the last of the dirt was piled on the casket. "Please, let's go."
"I'll come see you tomorrow,"
Caterina hugged him tight. At first, his arms lay stiff at his sides. "I'll be there bright and early. You can't get rid of me, you know." With those words, he threw his arms around Caterina. She hugged him back with all her might. Stefano was the smart one, the obedient one, and Marco had always thought the favorite. Marco knew that his brother was all of those things. But perhaps even more importantly, Stefano was also his mother's hope for the future. He was not a fisherman, nor would he ever be. But for Marco, understanding the winds and sea was survival nonetheless. As tempting as the thought of sea urchin was, as their soft and salty flesh would surely keep the hunger pangs at bay, Marco thought better of it. He tucked his knife into the waistband of his pants and headed back toward shore. All around him, even before his feet reached the sand, the winds began to rattle and shake the cypress and olive trees that lined the cove, as the tide rushed more urgently toward the beach.
"And I have another dream sometimes, too. There's a lady in white who comes to me. She seems very nice, and she's always smiling. Clotho tells me she's watching over me, but I don't know who she is. That sounds like a nice dream."
"It is, but it makes me sad also."
"Why?" "Because I can't remember the last time I saw Mama smile."
They walked in silence for the rest of the way. The silence of best friends, whose most meaningful conversations needed no words. But nothing would stop her from seeing her again. She continued on. Just a little farther down the path. Just a few more steps. Another moment or two, and she would be in the only place she had ever truly belonged. Her mother's arms. The trees gave way to a large clearing in the center of the forest. The light was brighter here. And then she saw her.
"Mama,"
she cried.
"Mama. Mama, I want you to think of love like a flower, Caterina, a rose,"
he continued, tracing his fingers along a single perfect rose.
"Look at this beautiful flower, so rich in color and so fragrant. This precious flower needs soil to keep her rooted and to thrive, the foundation upon which she grows. That's exactly the way it is with love and faith. For love to exist between a parent and a child, between adults, even between friends, for any type of love to grow and thrive, it must be rooted in faith. There can be no love without faith in one another, without trust. Do you understand?"
"Yes, Baba, I do."
She nodded her head up and down.
"To love someone, to have faith in them, is to continue forward, knowing in your heart that they will always be there to follow behind."
Caterina squeezed her father's hand and smiled at him.
"Tell me again, Mama, the story of Nyx, like you used to when I was a little girl."
"Yes, because you're very grown up now, but never too grown up for a story."
And so Caterina snuggled together with Don and told her the story of Nyx, feared by gods and men and the protector of children in the night. And as she drifted off to sleep, entangled in the embrace of her daughter, Caterina made a note to call Clotho in the morning and ask her the meaning of Don's dream, the same dream she herself had when she was a child. She would never admit it out loud, but Alice rather enjoyed her newfound notoriety as the eccentric mother-in-law of the Queen.
"Oh, Theodora, I've long ago given up caring what people say or think. I know how they talk and joke about the nun who wears a habit, yet smokes and drinks and plays canasta."
She laughed, making smoke circles with her cigarette.
"I know all about the gossip, and I also know the work that needs to be done. In my nun's habit, dressed this way,
No one judges me. They don't care that my dress is not the latest fashion or my hair is not properly styled. Dressed like this, I can focus on my work and I can help the people who need me most. That is all that matters. You see those papers, those headlines, as a distraction. I see them as a way to bring attention to my work. Alice directed her gaze at Theodora. Before the girls could argue further, a knock at the door interrupted the discussion. We had a visitor while you were gone. Did your Italian friend come over again to fill your ears with gossip? No. This one was Greek. His name was Stavros. He rang the bell at midnight and asked for you. When I told him you were not here, he said to give you a message. Is that right? He said you owe him money. He did he? Yes. And he said now he knows where you work and also where you live. She clutched the teacup tighter until her knuckles turned white. The words depleted him. He looked frail in that moment, as if he barely had the strength to stand. She held the bag to her chest and took a step toward him. He shook his head. Caterina stopped and stood there in the moonlight.